Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Mercer, 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Church Congregation, Montana, at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May the 3rd, 2014, or it is if 5, 2018, we will start a second service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, What a Friend We Have in Yahshua. What a friend we have in Yahshua. Oh, our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to Yah in prayer. Oh, what grace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. All because we do not carry everything to Yah in prayer. Trials and temptation, is it trouble everywhere? We should never be discouraged. Take it to the Yah in prayer, and we find a friend so faithful. Will all the sorrow share? We should never be discouraged. Take it to the Yah in prayer. Heavy laden, cumbered with the load of care. Precious Savior, still our refuge. Take it to the Yah in prayer. Do thy friends despise, forsake thee? Take it to the Yah in prayer. In his arms he'll take and see thee. Thou wilt find a solace there. Part 9, the Call on the Vanguard, Brother Stedger Johnson. We're on page 22. And we're going to pick up where we left off on the last and do a little review. We're on paragraph 16, taken from one-timely greetings, number 8. And he's quoting all these paragraphs, and we're on number 16, but we're going to do a little review. We're going back up to at least number 13, paragraph 13. He says, here is seen genuine revival and reformation accompanied by the purification of the church. Okay. So, as I pointed out in my study before, this one here was that the revival and reformation is brought by the Antipope Elijah in Malachi 4:5. When he comes on the scene, he's the one that brings revival and reformation. Well, where does he start at? He starts with the church that he was raised up in. And that's Elijah David with Elijah's message. And I was raised up in the 11th Hour Adventist Remnant Church. I was raised up from 1970. And now Elijah is standing up here in 2002. And he's bringing revival and reformation to the Gilead Center at Kermit, Texas. Okay. And it's accompanied by the purification of the church. And so what purifies the church? You have to repent, confess your sin, and throw off your filthy garments and get put on these clean garments. Get your sins blotted out at the atonement of that year, and when that revival comes, the year that it comes in, then you're to do all of these things, and so that you can get your sins blotted out at the atonement, and that's what purifies the church. So that's what Brother Johnson was called to do, starting at the Passover 2002, and he had a 6-month period of time to get rid of his filthy garments and to take on the new garments, be clothed upon with that house in heaven, Corinthians chapter 5, verse 1 through 3. He was supposed to do all of that. So so Yahshua could have a pure church and a clean people. Okay, so he failed to do that, and so therefore the rest is history. We're going to go on down to paragraph 14. Verse 10, and we're quoting from Zechariah chapter 3. And we're in verse 10 now. It says, in that day, saith Yahshua of hosts, shall ye call every man his neighbor under the vine and under the fig tree. Okay, in that day. That's the purification of the church, folks. And in that day comes in the 12th prayer by the God. Paragraph 15. In that day, in the day this purification takes place, the gospel work is to be quickly finished. Okay. Now, the purification takes place to purify the sons of Levi that are being introduced by the Mount Zion at the 11th hour Gilead Center. The tribes of the sons of Levi is 144,000 people that are being announced by the 11th hour prophet, Brother Johnson. Okay, so say, in that day, in the day that this purification takes place, and this purification took place in 2002, it's Kermit, Texas. It took place on the Day of Atonement, which was, I think it was October the 6th, September the 16th of 2002. I believe it's right, Mark. The gospel work is to be quickly finished. Okay, so now the gospel work that is prophesied in Matthew 24:14, when this gospel of the kingdom has been preached as a witness unto all nations, then shall the end come. So, this gospel, what gospel? Gospel of the kingdom. What does gospel mean? Good news of salvation. Salvation, how is salvation obtained? Through the blood of the everlasting covenant. Who is in charge of this blood? It's the blood of Yahshua. When he rose from the dead, he had new blood in his veins. He lost all this, the old blood when he died. And that was for the old covenant. But when he resurrects with new blood in his veins. And his father, by the power of the everlasting covenant, resurrects his son from the tomb. And so therefore, he has the new and living way, Hebrews 10:20, the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua. And that's what's going to finish the work in these last days. Okay, and that blood is now made available through the fountain that is open for sin unto cleanness. There's a fountain open unto David, which is in Zechariah 13. And Ezekiel 47 river now, when it starts flowing outside of the sanctuary, after the 144,000 are sealed, right now Ezekiel 47 river, I have taught before, is already flowing into the world, but it's not. Ezekiel 47 river is not flowing into the world. Because it starts flowing from the altar in the first apartment. In the first apartment, then is where you measure the temple. And inspiration has shown us that the measuring of the temple is the numbering of the 144,000. So they are numbered in the court and in the temple. Okay, so that little river, Ezekiel 47, it starts flowing. It just starts flowing as a little trickle out of the east side of the altar. goes out the underneath the threshold of the door on the east side when it goes out into the world. So we're in that little river flowing, and it's primarily the gathered 144,000. Once we get them numbered and collected, then that river flows outside of the sanctuary, and it goes at different levels, and then it finally gets so big that you can't swim across it, and it grows into the great sea, meaning it's going out now to the Gentile world, and it's going to circle the earth, and it's going to do it four ways, north, south, east, and west. Okay, and so right now we're in the gathering and the numbering of the 144,000. Now we have some new light on the length of time that this is going to take place. Using the top and antitype, Jacob left his father's house at the age of 30, having obtained the birthright from his his brother Esau. And because of getting it by fraud, he had to flee from the wrath of his brother. He had to flee out of his father's house, out of the land of the promised land. He had to go. But before he crossed over the border into Mesopotamia, into another land, to go to his kinfolks' house to spend the next 20 years, before he crossed over, though, he had a dream. And he dreamed that there was a stairway reaching from heaven to earth. And the angels were ascending and descending on that stairway. And when he woke from that dream, he built an altar. Okay, he raised up an altar of rock. He said, surely this is the gateway to heaven and the house of Yahweh. And he says, Yahweh was in this place. And Yahweh is in this place right here. And this is the gateway to heaven and the house of Yahweh. And he made a cut right there. He said, Yahweh, if you'll bring me back to my father's house, to this land, I will surely give you 10% of my increase. Showing that he's going to pay a holy tithe faithfully. And so Jacob made a covenant with Yahweh, and Yahweh honored it. So Jacob had to go then across the border, go into this the other land, and he had to work for 20 years, paying for his sins, for one thing, and getting four wives and 12 sons to represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And they're getting much chattel and servants. And then he's directed to head back for his father's house. Okay. So Jacob, whenever he left his father's house 20 years earlier, started also the Jacob's time of trouble. Jacob didn't have no trouble as long as he stayed there. Home in his father's house and minding his own business, he didn't have no trouble. But whenever he decided he couldn't wait on Yahweh to get that birthright, and he had to get it by fraud from his brother, that started the time of Jacob's trouble. And what was Jacob's trouble with? It was with his brother. Same thing today. Jacob's trouble. So when did Jacob's trouble start today in the antitype? Well, Jacob was born antitypically in 1970 at Gideon Center, Kermit, Texas, along with his brother Esau. But we had two characters then represent Esau and Jacob there in Gideon Center. And so when the 30 years for Gideon Center arrived in 1999 at the Solemn Assembly, the Lord spoke to Brother Johnson, the angel of the seventh candlestick, let us hear, the prophet, the voice of inspiration for the Adventist church, spoke to him and said, lock the doors at 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock and sanctify the congregation. Tomorrow is a solemn assembly, that's when you sanctify them. Well, the thing is, when you come through the atonement and get your sins blotted out 12 days earlier, Then you come to the Solemn Assembly, the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles, which is 12 days after the Atonement. And the priest is told to sanctify the congregation. Well, if that congregation don't get their sins blotted out at the Atonement, how are you going to sanctify them? It just so happened that in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, that there were some folks there in that congregation that didn't get their sins blotted out, including Verse W. Johnson. Only those that are signed and for the abomination being done in the church, the Gilead Center, was the only one that got the sins blotted out. And at that time, there was only three of us that were signed and crying against the abominations. That was me and my wife and Alan DeLong. So in 1999, we were the only three people out of that congregation that got our sins blotted out that could be sanctified. And we obeyed that charge to be there at 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock. So if there's anybody sanctified, it was us three that were signed upon the abominations in 1999. Because we obeyed the command. Rose called us the night before and said, be there. We were there, all three of us. And but though, his son, the associate pastor, Daniel, and his son, Rodney, were called also, but they said, well, sound like you're trying to run everybody off. I think we'll just stay home. And so he did. But we know that Willis Johnson left the doors open. He didn't lock the doors at night and hoped that his son would change his mind, reconsider, and come on in. Thinking that he'd leave the door open anyway. And whenever his son arrived, he'd come in anyway. But that wasn't the way it was supposed to work. And so, the only body that sanctified then at the Solemn Assembly was three of us. And technically, that's when the guard was changed from the old guard to the new guard, from the antitypical King Saul to the antitypical David. And in the top, you know, David succeeded King Saul. Okay. Remember, keep in mind that King Saul was put in charge of the kingdom of Israel, but it was a temporal kingdom. And David is put in charge of the eternal, everlasting kingdom that has no end. Okay? So that's where we're at today. Antipas, King Saul, was placed in charge of the kingdom of Israel. Notice I said the kingdom of Israel, because technically Willis Johnson was in charge of the 12 tribes. So he said in 1970 that the 12 tribes were the sign, a voice spoke to him, told him that the 12 tribes were the sign unto his movement. So Willis Johnson was put in charge of the 12 tribes, even though he was sitting upon the throne of Judah and representing Mount Edom from the throne of Judah. He didn't know this, which is the headquarters for the tribe, for the house of David. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is, that Jacob ended his antitypical Jacob ended his first 30 year period in 1999 at the Solemn Assembly. Okay, and so did Esau. That's when Esau lost his antitypical birthright. That's when Willis Johnson, Yahweh treated him like he did King Saul when he disobeyed the command to lock the doors. Then a message came by the antitypical Elijah, and which I did. I got a message from heaven. And I went to Rhoda. I said, you know what? I said, you and your son and all those that didn't, that willfully disobeyed that order to come in and be there at 9 and 3 o'clock, but your son and your grandson, they're both ordained ministers. You've ordained them both. You haven't ordained me, but you've ordained them, and so they're obligated to obey your command. And you called them and told them to be there at 9, and they disobeyed. So therefore, Daniel and his son was cut off, and he says, one day later on, months later on, he said, now let's talk about that again. He said, do you still think Daniel was cut off? I said, absolutely. Well, then Alvin was cut off too, because he wasn't there at 9 either. I said, yeah, but you didn't call Alan and tell him. You only told his wife, and she didn't tell Alan. Alan had a key in his pocket. He always comes for the morning service. He's always there on time. just because he's a few minutes late behind another car, because he said, I guarantee if you'd have called him and told him, he'd have been there. I mean, with bells on. So he was credited for being there. And I told her, I said, no, he wasn't cut off. It was your son and your grandson. And I said, technically, you were cut off too, for disobeying the command to lock the door. Well, brother, she decided he'd had enough of that conversation. Let us go to work. And I had a job to do that day. So let's go to work. But he never got over that idea that they were cut off at the Psalm of Sunday 1999, ending a 30-year period for antiquity, Esau and Jacob. So that's when technically the guard was changed. Heaven made it regular. Changed it from Esau to his spiritual twin brother, Jacob. Okay. 3.5 years later, we had a sanctifying of the congregation, fulfilling Zechariah 3, where the true Joshua, the son of Joseph, David, Ezekiel says is antithetical David. Got his filthy garments changed, and he got a fair amount of put upon his head, and he was assigned 4 helpers. Of course, I'd like to see those 4 helpers show up. I sure could use some helpers. But anyway, that's another part to talk about at another time. It's not important right now. So now, Jacob, and the antitype has to go spend another 20 years. He spent his first 30 years from 1970 to through 1999 at Charlotte, Texas. Got the birthright. And I was playing the role of antithetical Jacob at that time, because Brother Johnson was playing the role of antithetical Esau. So now Jacob's got 20 more years to go, and what did he do in his 20 years in the type? He went and got 4 wives, 12 sons to represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And then he was commanded to head back toward his father's house to the land of promise and the land of Canaan, where Israel stands today. And Yahweh told him also to go and make a deed and give some money and pay some money to have this deed written out in his name and the seed after him to inherit this land. So that's another thing that Jacob did. And, Jeremiah did that. Jeremiah did that. And so what I'm trying to say is that Jacob had 50 years in the type to bring forth the 12 tribes of Israel with 12 sons. And he has 50 years in the antitype, starting in 1970. 2020 should bring us to the time of closing out the chapter of the 50 years antitype for Jacob and for the bringing forth the 144,000. So folks, we're looking at about a 6-year here down in the future. I'm not going to back off from it, because if we don't have type, we certainly don't have any antitype. If we don't have any antitype, we don't have any truth for today. We can't teach meat in due season, fresh provender on a daily basis, unless we got a blueprint and something to go by. Okay, and it takes inspiration to give the understanding on this. And this is how, with inspiration, giving the understanding is how we learn to choose the good and refuse the evil. Okay. So, having said all of that, let's just go right on now into paragraph 15. Let's do that again. It says, I'm on page 22 of this little track, Brother Johnson's track, Calling of the Vanguard. He says, in the day this purification takes place, the gospel work is to be quickly finished. Well, now, just a minute. The gospel work has a mandate. It has the 12th parabolic hour to do this work. I know that's a short time. That's only 1 hour of the 12, but nevertheless, to quickly finish it and cut the work short in righteousness, well, that took place in 2002 at Charlotte, Texas. That work had been going on 33 years and had bogged down. So he brought Elijah the prophet onto the scene, and he already had him there to give a message to the church that and the church should either obey it and continue on into the next movement, or disobey it and be cut off and be forever finished. That's what happened. The gospel come to them and they rejected it. It cut the work short in righteousness. Their work was cut short in righteousness at Gilead Center. It was cut short. Right when they were on the twilight zone and entering upon the rising of the sun to realize the fulfillment of their dreams of seeing the 144,000 come forth and the 12th parabolic hour to start the harvest, no longer having to labor in the vineyard of planting seed and going out and cultivating and bringing forth a harvest. The harvest is already guaranteed. It's already there. All they have to do now is believe the truth of the next messenger, accept it, repent, get the filthy garments changed, and step into the everlasting kingdom, the eternal life of the everlasting kingdom of David. All their worries and all their toils and strife is over. Just accept the truth from the new messenger, and instead of having your work cut short, and it continues on forever. So you cut your own work short by rejecting the messenger and his message. That's what happened at Gilead Center. They cut their nose off to spite the face. Because they hated the messenger, they didn't like the messenger that Yahshua chose to deliver this revival reformation through. They didn't like it. They didn't like it because one of their brethren was raised up among them, and they didn't like that. But the Spirit of Prophecy says that's what exactly the way it will happen. That there'll be one raised up among you, one of your like unto your brethren. He will be raised up right in the midst of you. But they send a message after him saying, we'll not have this man to rule over us. Now we don't mind you ruling over us, Yahshua, but we don't want this man that you have appointed to rule over us. Well, we come to dislike him, and as a matter of fact, we even hate him. We don't even want him in our midst, and yet you have come and chose him to reign over us? No. So that's what kept their work short in Russia, by them rejecting the messenger, and that was antithetical with Elijah. They've been looking for this Elijah for many, many years, and when he shows up, they reject him. Okay? So it says, in that day, in the day this purification takes place, the gospel work is to be quickly finished by having every member of the Yeshua's house call his neighbor to his own patch of land. What do you mean his neighbor to his own patch of land? Talking about the 12 tribes of Israel. They've come on the scene now. And they've got their own boundary lines laid out. 12 boundary lines for each one of those 12 tribes. They've got it already laid out. You go read Ezekiel 48. It's got it right there in Ezekiel 48, verse 35. It says, every member of the Yahshua's house call his neighbor unto his own patch of land. Okay. To that which Elohim has preordained that everyone should have. Now we're of the tribe of Judah, folks. And we've got our own already assigned to us. As it was in the type, so it is in the antitype. The land of Judah is where we're at right now. The whole nation of Texas is put in Judah's charge. Judah's old boundary lines is in the Austin, Texas area, in the hill countries of Antipolis, Judea. This is the boundary lines, our boundary line. We have inherited the heartbeat of Texas. The heart of Texas. We have a song, Deep in the Heart of Texas, somebody wrote years ago. Well, we're deep in the heart of Texas. And so this is where we're going to rule the 12 tribes from when they come here. Every member, therefore, is to be a missionary in one capacity or in another. This indeed is the layman's movement that shall finish the gospel work. Paragraph 16. The statement, call every man his neighbor under the vine and under the fig tree, appears also in Micah 4. It teaches the same thing as Zechariah teaches. Paragraph 17. This subject, however, does not stop with Zechariah 3. It continues on. Paragraph 18, Zechariah 6:11. Then take silver and gold and make crowns and sit them upon the head of Joshua, the son of Josedek. Now, Brother Johnson is finally putting the son of Josedek with this Joshua in Zechariah 3. Because he's wanting you to think all the time that it's the same Joshua that he started out with in 1970, Joshua the son of Nun. He's dealing with two Joshuas, but he don't want you to know the difference. But he's forced now to, because he's quoting Zechariah 6:11. And so if anybody's been keeping up with Brother Johnson's history, they would know that he thought that he was this Joshua the son of Nun in 1970, which is not the same as the Joshua the son of Jehoshaphat. Because Joshua the son of Nun comes on the scene in the 11th parabolic hour during the judgment of the dead period, and Joshua the son of Jehoshaphat in Zechariah 3 comes on the scene in the 12th hour in the judgment of the living period. See? Okay, paragraph 19. The angel is commanded to take silver and gold and to make crowns, not one, but more than one. These are set upon Joshua's head. Okay. Now, as I told you in my earlier study, that Joshua is another name for Yahshua. So, Joshua the son of Nun, that's a good name to have for Brother from 1970. Because he also had a message called the Isaac branch message, and Isaac prefigured Yahshua in the top. And the branch is another name for Yahshua. And Joshua is another name for Yahshua. So Brother Johnson, he's in good company here. He inherited all these names. Okay? And his message was the branch, and his name was another name for Yahshua. Man, I mean, he had everything just right for him. Paragraph 20, Zechariah 3:14. And the crown shall be unto Helam, and to Tobiah, and unto Jedidiah, and unto him, the son of Zephaniah, for a memorial in the temple of the Yahshua. Now, it's important that you call that Lord by his right identity. This is Yahshua's temple. It's called the Everlasting Temple of David. Because you know what? That temple is going to come back at the end of the millennium, and it's going to be right there in the same place where it started out. Well, actually, it's going to be transferred to the land of Israel, but it's going to start out here in Texas. But this temple is in a traveling throne. It's in a flying saucer, folks. And if it's not in a flying saucer, it will be end up in a flying saucer to be transported from here to Israel. Okay? And Yahshua is sitting upon the throne of David in this temple. Okay? So, these four helpers of Zechariah, they also have a throne. David has a throne also in this temple. Now, what I was about to say here is that there are two thrones in this temple of Yahshua here. That it's talking about right here that this is Joshua the son of Jehoshaphat. He's crowned as a king. He's got a fair mitre to put upon his head. Beat the heart with inspiration says that this Joshua the son of Jehoshaphat is antithetical of David. And this antithetical David is the same thing as this antithetical Elijah. And that he sit upon a throne. Well, it says that in Luke 1:32 that Yahshua, that Yahweh the Father has given unto his son Yahshua the throne, earthly throne of his father David to sit upon. But I can show you where David is also going to come forth these last days and sit upon a throne. Where's that throne at? It's in the temple of David. This is David's temple here on earth. Okay. It's also the temple of heaven. That is the temple of David. And it's the temple of Yahshua. All three. The Father, the Son, and David share conjointly in this temple. Okay. So the Son has a throne in that temple, and David has a throne in that temple. Okay. When David comes forth, he's not a sanctified, purified person. When antithetical Elijah shows forth, he's not a sanctified, purified person either. He's living up to all the life that he has, maybe, and he's accounted righteousness by faith, by virtue of sign of counsel against abominations. He's given privilege versus having righteousness, all right, but not sanctification and purification, where he can meet the Father face to face and look upon his face no more than Moses could. And Moses was certainly sanctified and pure of God, but look what Moses did in the end. He committed a sin and was charged against him. He wasn't allowed to go into the promised land because of that. But yet, Moses was the most meekest man that ever walked the face of the earth, and he was 100% righteous, but nevertheless, he was vulnerable. Still can commit sin. Okay? So now it says paragraph 21, verse 14 reveals that Joshua is to pass the crowns on unto his helpers, whom the Yahshua himself names. Okay, well, Yahshua came in 2002. He named Elijah David as the successor to antitypical Esau, Brother Johnson. He named him. He gave him a new name. Okay. So it goes on to say, this is to be a memorial and an everlasting reminder in the temple of the Yahshua. Well, absolutely, because this is going to go into the earth made new, and it's going to be there throughout eternity, this throne room. It's going to be there throughout eternity. Paragraph 22. What can all this mean? Just this. Joshua is heaven's appointed judge. Okay. What Joshua? Joshua, the son of Jehoshaphat. Antitypical Elijah, or antitypical David, spirit and power of Elijah, either one, is heaven's appointed judge, ruler. So people say, no, it says, you're not a judge, you're not going to rule over me. That's what it said in Luke 19:14. We'll not have this man to rule over us. He's not going to be our judge. We've had him for so many long in our midst that we've come to a place we just learned to hate him. We can't stand the sight of him anymore. And you're going to appoint him to be over us? No, we won't have it. He himself is crowned as such. So it says this here, Yahshua invisibly crowns his visible servant, Elijah David, and he crowns him. When he gives him a change of the guard and change the name at Gilead, he crowned him. Heaven recorded that away. And in response unto the Yahshua's own command, Joshua crowns and authorizes his helpers, whom the Yahshua himself names. Alright? Well, Alan DeLong has been with us now for 33 years. He started out with me and Royce Johnson at Gilead Center back in about 1981, something like that. And now he continued on with the unfolding of the scroll, and he stepped into truth as it unfolded, and he's here right here today as a witness to this. And so, Alan could very well be one of these here that Joshua, the son of Joseph, names as his helper. Because he's already been my helper personally for the last 12 years, since 2002. Okay? In other words, as members of the house of David, Joshua authorized them to engage in their work. So Joshua is responsible unto the Yahshua, but his helpers are responsible unto Joshua. So, now if you have been designated as one of these helpers of Joshua, happy are you. This should be a happy occasion for you to learn that this good news, that this has happened unto you, that you can have such a close connection with the top office in the land as to be the number one helper. I remember when I joined Brother Johnson and I learned that he was a true prophet in Israel, I was so thrilled, because up to then I thought Ellen G. White was the last prophet, and I rejected V.T. Hardiff as a false prophet. And to think that I met somebody that was of that old shepherd's rod cloth, and he was labeled as a prophet. Man, I had to pinch myself. And then when I realized that Yahweh called me to be his right-hand helper, I thought, wow, what a high calling, what a privilege that Yahweh would look down upon me and call me out of the Adventist church to come and join his prophet and to be his right-hand helper. Well, that they told me that one day. They said, "Well, you're our lifeline into the church," said, out there in that field. Said, Laura May says, the wife says, "Well, I use the information you send down here during the week. I use it for my current events." She says, "You're our lifeline into this church." So how'd that make me feel? I said, "Well, that's Yahweh's doing." And so I felt like I was a number one helper for the prophet. Just like Gehazi was the number one helper to Elisha that succeeded Joshua. Elisha was the number one helper to Elijah. Gehazi was joined to Elisha to be his number one helper. So that's quite a high calling and high privilege, folks. Let's go on. Here's seen an organization having a leader, Elijah, David, and Yahshua the Messiah, and his under leader, Elijah, David. Okay, now here, I'll read that again. Here is seen an organization having a leader and an under leader. The leader is Yahshua, the righteous branch, and Joshua, the son of Josedech, as his under leader, the visible leader. Yahshua, the invisible leader, and Joshua, the son of Josedech, as a visible leader. Which ends up with inspiration showing that this is antitypical David. Thus it is that whatever is to be bound on earth is also to be bound in heaven, Matthew 16:19. And let me tell you something. This is exactly what my first job to do, was start cleaning up that place down in Kermit, Texas in 2001. And January 27, 2001, I issued my first letter to a member of the church to start this here United of the Congregation of Gilead Center. And it actually ended up inadvertently uniting the Congregation of Gilead Center by separating the two parties in there at the Passover and Atonement of 2002. Paragraph 23. As correctly as heaven can make it, this symbolism depicts that Elohim's people in his final work are not to labor at the cross purposes. All others speak the same thing. So now here Brother Johnson is pleading with the flock there at Gilead Center. We've got to, we can't labor at cross purposes. We've all got to speak the same thing. So it is that his watchmen shall lift up the voice, with the voice together shall they sing, for they shall see eye to eye when the Yahshua shall bring again Zion. Isaiah 58. Then his people shall be called the holy people, the redeemed of the Yahshua, sought out, a city not forsaken, Isaiah 62:12. Paragraph 24. Joshua is well instructed that the burden and the ingenuity for the building of this spiritual temple belongs unto him, whose name is the branch. Okay. Now, this is Yahshua's name. When he takes command and orchestrates the building of this temple, then he has a name called the branch. He is to grow up out of his place. Where was his place at? Gilead Center. 1970, 2003. Now I want to back up and read Zechariah 6:12 here. It says, "And speak unto him, saying, Thus speaketh the Yahshua of the host." No, Yahweh of the host. This would be the Father. "Behold, the man whose name is the branch, and he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Yahshua." Now, folks, I'm going to show you something here, and if I'm wrong, I stand to be corrected. But I'm going to reread that again. Because, as Vicki Hoff has proved before, that the Yahshua, that the Lord of hosts is Yahshua. He's Yahshua. Now, I told you there in Jeremiah 23, verse 5, that he's going to cause the rope unto David a righteous branch. And he said, and this is a name whereby he shall be called the Yeshua, or righteousness. Now this righteous branch grew up to David, and his name is called Yeshua, or righteousness. Okay. Now I know that this here branch is Yeshua, so I'm just going to leave that stand like it is, and speak unto him, saying, thus speaketh the Yahweh, the Father of the host, saying, behold a man whose name is the branch, that would be the name of his son, Yeshua, and he shall grow up out of his place. And we do know that antipathy, Yeshua was born in the message in 1970 at Gilead Center, and we know that he spent 30 years growing up out of his place, though. And by the end of 30 years, at the Psalm of Assembly in 1999, he grew up out of his place, and then he went to work to purify his temple. Yahshua is in charge of this temple of Gilead Center. This is the temple where he went to work to purify, because this is where he was abiding for 30 years. He grew up out of this place at Gilead Center, and he's going to build this temple now. Okay. Verse 13, and he shall build the temple of the Yahweh. So this is Yahshua in charge of building this temple. And he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of the peace shall be between them both. Okay. Now let me show you something. This antithetical David is going to be a priest upon his throne. But Yahshua, when he comes back and takes his seat upon the throne of David, he's the King of kings and sovereign of sovereigns. And he's there to execute judgment and justice upon the nations. But his son, his underservant, this Joshua, son of Joseph, which is antithetical David, he sits as a priest upon his throne. Now remember when David was on the scene at the top, he operated as a prophet, priest, and king in his day. He operated in all three of those capacities. And a priest in the sense that he was a minister. And he did offer up sacrifices at the altar. And it says in Joel 2:15, let the priests and ministers of Yahweh weep between the porch and the altar. So priest is another name for ministers. Okay. So his antithetical David is going to sit upon his throne as a prophet, and as a priest or a minister, and a king, and a visible king. And he also has that name, the branch. Alright, if Yahshua's name is the branch, and he says he's going to marry his church, and call her the Yahshua or righteousness, then what are they? They're the righteous branch organization. Now we can go prove that in Jeremiah 23 and Jeremiah 33. As a matter of fact, this is a good time to do that. Let's just go and bear this point out. Okay, it says in Jeremiah 23, let's just go to verse 1 through 5. It says, woe be unto the pastors that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture, saith the Yahweh. Well, who were the pastors that scattered the sheep of his pasture? That was the antithetical Ishmael and the antithetical Esau, the last two leaders that succeeded Vetihaleth as the last designated prophet with the latter reign of truth to publish. They succeeded him, and they were the ones that scattered the sheep of his pasture, because it says in Zechariah 13, smite the shepherd and the sheep shall be scattered. Well, Vetihaleth was the shepherd that was smitten. Well, who scattered the sheep then? The hirelings. Ben Roden was nothing but a hireling. He was hired to fill out the last 15 years of the rod. He wasn't the prophet that was appointed at the beginning of the rod to be the angel of that candlestick, to operate over for 40 years. He was a hireling that succeeded the true shepherd that died. And what does it say the hireling does? It says he careth not for the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he runs. Well, what happens then when he runs? The sheep are scattered to every direction of the world. They're fleeing from this wolf. Okay? They're just gone. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, against the pastures that feed my people. Okay, so Ben Roden was hired to feed, to continue feeding the sheep. He was paid a salary, he was paid a wage. But he says, you have scattered my flock and driven them away and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doing, saith the Yahweh. Okay, and we know that Roshan succeeded Ben Roden as a harling. Okay, he was a harling. That was the it was commanded to feed my people. What did Roshan say that voice spoke to him and said, make my people a creation channel and teach my people the government of Yahweh. I just read it to you earlier in my study before. And Roshan said it. Says, teach my people. Well, what does it say right here in Jeremiah 23? It says, you are to teach my people. Okay. And I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries. Now here's your 144,000 right here. Whether I have driven them. So in order to protect the 144,000 from being destroyed by these false pastors, these harlings, Yahshua by the Spirit, Yahweh by the Spirit scattered that 144,000 into all nations. Got them away from these false prophets and these men that were hardened. I've always wondered why. Brother Johnson said, 1970, the voice spoke to him and said the 144,000 has been assigned to this movement. I said, oh, wonderful. He told me, he said, now you can go to Adventist Church and start getting the 144,000. And boy, I went to work like a house on fire. And in 1974, for getting ready to go to Atlanta, Israel. And that when I got to Elizabeth Jenkins, I went to the church one day in Mesquite, in Dallas, Texas area. And boy, I got a lady out of the Sabbath school class. As soon as the Sabbath school class over, she said, where'd you get that answer? And I said, I told her where I got it. She said, I want to study with you. You get Bible study? Yeah. Why? She said, first, before we even found out what my name was, she said, I got to go see a friend. She went and found a black lady friend of hers. She said, come and hear a man that told me things that I never heard before. She said, I'm going to have a Bible study with you. I want you to come and study with us. That's how quickly she was. She was ready to start spreading the word. Elizabeth Jenkins. And so she went and got this black lady, and that black lady went to their house and had a study that afternoon. And they accepted the truth. And then they went and got three more people. Boy, I mean, they just started going to work. And so I went and called Versus, I've got five people that are ready to study and join this church. And he said, well, you got a long ways to go. You got 144,000. Yeah. I said, well, they're going and you're getting their friends. Okay, so I said, I will gather the remnant of my flock. But guess what? The remnant of his flock has been scattered all over the world to get them away from these false harlan shepherds in the Adventist Church that came through the Davidian world. But if they'd have come in and started joining Ben Roden and accepting the truth that he was teaching, well, he'd have raised up a kingdom of a bunch of people that's following false light. And if Brother Johnson had got the 144,000 during that period of time that he was on the scene, what would they have been following? False light. That's when he had to scatter them. When he smoked that shepherd beat the heart, that's when they had to be scattered all over the world to get away from these false shepherds and these false harlings that was coming on the scene. All right, now I want to make a point here. He says that therefore, thus saith Yahweh, Elohim, against the pastures that feed my people. You have scattered my flock and driven them away and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doing, saith Yahweh. And I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries whither I have driven them and will bring them again to their fold, and they shall be fruitful and increase. And I will set up shepherds over them which shall feed them, and they shall fear no more, nor be dismayed, neither shall they be lacking, saith Yahweh. Okay. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. In his days Judah, the lawgiver, shall be saved. And Antipater Elijah David is in charge of this Judah. And Israel shall dwell safely. Israel, the other ten tribes, shall dwell safely. And this is his name, whereby he shall be called the Yahshua, or righteousness. Now, another name for Yahshua is the righteous branch. Another name for Yahshua is Joshua. He has a lot of alternate names. But now, the point I'm trying to make here is, he said, I'm going to gather my people from all nations when they've been scattered. Okay, let's go to Ezekiel chapter 20, and let's read about that a little bit. In Ezekiel 20, verse 33, and it says, as I live, saith Yahweh Elohim, surely with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with fury poured out will I rule over you. And I will bring you out from the people and will gather you out of the countries wherein you are scattered with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with fury poured out. And I will bring you into the wilderness of the people, and there will I plead with you face to face. Okay, like as I plead with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, so will I plead with you, saith the Yahweh. Well, this wilderness of people is also antitypically in the wilderness of Egypt. The United States is designated spiritual Egypt today. And Texas, more preferably, is spiritual Egypt. We're just in the land of Goshen, actually, here in Texas. The place where Israel is designated place in Egypt. Now, the point I'm trying to make is the United States is made up of 50 states. Actually, Texas is not a state. It's an annexed nation, illegally, but that's another point. Which, let's just say that Texas is the headquarters of the New Jerusalem here in the Western Hemisphere, and that all the 49 states around it are separate nations. They have their own president, they have their own tax-paying system, they have their own government, they have their own constitution, patterned after the original constitution for the whole United States. And so therefore, they are designated as an independent nation of their own by design. So we know that Adventists are in all these nations around us, around Texas. We know that they're in every state of the Union. Plus, they're in just about every nation of the whole world around the globe. So when he says, I'm going to get you out of all nations when you've been scattered and bring you into the wilderness of the people, well, this prophecy is unfolding right here in Texas. So this is designated as the wilderness of the people. So he's going to bring the remnant. He says the remnant, which is 144,000, he's going to bring them out of all nations. Now let's look at a type for this. In the type, the ten tribes, because they decided to go north and separate from Judah in the south, and to get away from Jerusalem, they went north and they set up their own headquarters with the first king Jeroboam, and they set up two golden calves, and they went so far into idolatry that their king that was right there ruling in Assyria, and actually in their own land. Okay, and so they allowed them to be taken over in their own land, the ten tribes, by the king of Assyria, which was a pagan heathen king. And it says they were assimilated among the nations after that. They lost their identity, the ten tribes. Similar among the nations all around. And then it says in 70 A.D. when Jerusalem was destroyed and sacked by Titus, it says there was a 3.5-year window for the tribe of Judah, the remnant there, to flee out of Jerusalem. And said they were of the tribe of Judah, and said they fled into all the countries round about them, heading north. So they fled into all the countries, and that's where the remnant of Judah is at today, is also in all those countries. So when he says he's going to gather the remnant of his people, he's talking about the remnant of the 12 tribes, Judah included. He's going to gather them right here into Texas, and this is where he's going to, then he says he's going to purge out the rebels from among them here in Texas, and they'll not enter into the land of Israel. So right here in Ezekiel 20. He's going to call them pass under the rod into the bond of the covenant. This is 144,000, folks. Okay. So now that this light is unfolding in a clear sense at this time now, so this is what we can expect to take place from here on in. Is understanding fully now when this 144,000 is going to come forth, because they have to come forth here into this wilderness people where this rod is being taught, where this prophecy is unfolding. They've got to pass under the rod right here in the Wilderness People, which is right here in Texas. They're going to come out of all the 49 states, Alaska, Hawaii, and all of them. And they're going to come out of all the southern. There's Adventists carried down to Brazil. There's Adventists carried down to Brazil. They're all over the South American country. They're all over Canada and the North American country. They're all over all nations of the world. So it's going to start with everything around the borders of Texas. That's the reason why Yahweh is going to put a wall of fire around the borders of Texas at the time when this starts taking place. He's going to take flying saucers and he's going to go all over the world. He's going to get the remnant of his people. He's going to bring them right here to Texas. Okay. The wicked cannot cross through this wall of fire to come in here. But they are wicked people inside of this place. And they're going to, and those wicked people are actually called Christians that are Sabbath keepers and so forth. They're claiming to be the remnant, but he's going to purge out the rebel from among them. He's going to cause them to pass on the rod into the bond of the covenant. That's the procedure of the sanctuary system. You start passing on the rod at the Passover. That's what they did down in Egypt, coming out of Egypt. They had to pass on the rod to get out of Egypt. That blood. And then they came into the wilderness of the people. That's where they were processed for the next 40 years in the wilderness of the people. And then what happened before they crossed over into the promised land under Joshua at the end of 40 years? The rebels were purged out and left in the wilderness. Same thing today in the Antichrist. This brings close us to this hour contest at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. We're going to close this service now with a song by the Elijah David. Dusty roads and sandal feet.
I have reason to believe in that man of Galilee, for he walked those dusty roads for you and me. Often cries, great and stone, carries burden all along, as he journeyed along that road to Calvary. Dusty roads and sandal feet. All the journey was complete from the manger to the cross. To those golden streets, to a place in the land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, dusty roads and sandal feet. I have reason to believe in that land of Galilee, but there's nothing in this world that couldn't be. Water into wine, cast that demon, heal the blind, and that's why I believe in that man of Galilee. Dusty roads are his companion, desert places, his abode, and those feet were often weary and lonely with a heavy load. Never complaining as he went a lonely way. Would you like to meet that man named Joshua coming down your street? Would you be like Zacchaeus and climb up in a tree? Or would you be like Jonah only to see? Dusty roads and no feet, all the journey was complete from the manger to the cross. To those golden streets, to a place in that land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, dusty roads and